Our first conversation today requires little introduction. We only have to mention the terms Pittsburgh and synagogue in the same sentence for you to get the gist. 11 people died in a Pittsburgh synagogue last week, shot by someone who apparently does not like Jews. Several more people were injured. The Tree of Life shooting shocked the country and certainly hit close to home for other Jews. We invited some previous guests back to share their thoughts on what happened in Pittsburgh and what any of us should do or think in response. On the phone, we have Rabbi Deborah Kolodny from the Unshul in Portland, who has been a guest in the past talking about her training on interrupting hate in public spaces. Deborah Kolodny, thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, good to have you here. Rabbi David Zaslow is in the studio with me from Ashland's Havarah Shir Hadash. Good to see you once again.
Great to see you too, Jeff.
So let me just ask you each individually, first starting with you, David. What were you doing when you heard, and how did it hit you?
Well, it pretty much stunned me because it was on Shabbat. It was on our Sabbath, and one of our members came into the synagogue and told us about it, that they heard about it. So when you hear about something like that, you immediately go into, of course, shock. And then the grief starts coming up and all the other emotions of anger and frustration. And then, of course, fear. Are we doing enough in our synagogue to protect our members?
Was there a moment of, like a secondary thought of like, well, this probably happened because? Was there anything like that?
No, you know, when emotions come up immediately, you're not so much in your intellect and trying to figure it out. That happened later. We had a vigil on Saturday night at the synagogue. And then, that really brought up why this kind of thing happened. We had a Native American speaker, a Muslim imam, a Christian pastor, myself, several other rabbis coming together. And then we tried to understand what could possibly trigger this or cause this.
That's impressive. That vigil came together pretty fast.
It came to amazingly fast. You know, I organized it at 4 p.m. and at 7:30 p.m. we had the synagogue was full.
Rabbi Deborah Kolodny, tell us about where you were and what your first thoughts were.
Yeah, well, my community gathered the night before, Friday night, for our Shabbat communal experience. And so on Saturday morning, I was actually at home when this happened. And I heard about it from a dear friend, Pastor Matt Hennessy, who got in touch with all of his Jewish friends to tell us how distressed he was. And the day ended up being filled with colleagues and allies and from all faiths and from secular, just sharing their despair and their distress and checking in to see how I was doing. It was overwhelming. So something positive that came out of this was the commitment that all of us have who have experienced targeting or blaming or hate, especially escalated in the last couple of years. We're really together in this. The beauty and the love that is flowing is remarkable.
Yeah, I have to agree with that, Rabbi Deb and Jeff. And the letters that we got, the emails that we got flowers yesterday from a church. People just outside the Jewish community coming, you know, to us and comforting us and sending us notes and of compassion. It makes us feel like the alliance between our differences is more important than the differences within our theologies.
I was going to ask you. You talked about not getting into the intellect part of your head. It's emotions first. Although you have to get through that fairly fast because you have a community that you're trying to take care of as
yeah.
well. So once you get yourself stabilized, how do you approach people who then come to you with spiritual guidance?
Well, the spiritual guidance is
you're
with the community. It's not like I'm not grieving and mourning as well. Mm-hmm. It's just that, you know, as Rabbi Deborah knows and I know, you just try to share and be part of the community and go through the grief together. At the same time, you're facilitating the expression of that grief. So what we did, at least on Saturday night for our vigil, and we have a healing service this Saturday morning, is just letting members of the community come and share poetry and songs and prayers. You know, to avoid, at least on the Shabbat, on the Sabbath, the politics of it and really come into the heart of our empathy. This is the week of Shiva, the week of mourning. The funerals are occurring all week long. And so our role as rabbis is also for the souls of the 11 departed, not just the 11, but also the two African Americans who were killed in Louisville, Kentucky. So we have 13 people killed in 1 week out of hatred, racial and anti-Semitic hatred.
Deborah Kolodny, the unshul, I think bears some explanation because David leads Havrashir Hadash, which is a Reform congregation
in
in Ashland. So tell us about what the unshul is.
Yeah, it's a community grounded in the notion that there are a lot of Jews here in the Portland metro area who are not attracted to traditional synagogue life. And so we wanted to ground our prayer and our study and our communal practice in what draws people here to Portland. So when we began, we had one service a month that was out on the hiking trail, where we would pray and we would study Torah as we hiked. And we also meet in people's homes all around the city. And we actually were founded on the principle of showing up for social justice. So we gather at least once a month for some kind of a rally or march to be allies with other communities, whether it's immigrant communities or Black communities or LGBTQ communities. And so one of the things that I really notice is since hate has been on the rise in the last couple of years, our relationships have been so solidified, so strengthened. And I think that's why people are coming out of the woodwork to really support us in this moment of need. And, you know, we are actually pretty traditional in a lot of ways. We meet on Shabbat 3 times a month, either Friday night or Saturday morning, and we have holy day celebrations. So it's really not that untraditional, I guess, in our essence. But I wanted to speak to your question about thinking about causality and also thinking about what to do, because my community immediately asked, you know, so what do we do?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I was not yet prepared, actually, to answer that. And I felt wrenched out of my own grief and overwhelmed to try and think what we do, about what we do. And for me, you know, I framed my response as, well, we vote and we grieve and ensure that voter suppression ends, and we grieve, and we ensure that we're there for our allies in their time of need, and we grieve. And I just, you know, this very, very long list. And I also put out that I think for Jews in particular, 50% or more are not affiliated with a synagogue. I think it's really important to see synagogues as communities of resilience and also of holy resistance and of social justice. And if we want to feel safe and we want to feel like we're part of the solution, then actually joining, whether it's an unshul or a shul, joining a synagogue is critical. And then, of course, the political analysis, as Rabbi David says, comes later. I'll also add that we had a vigil here on Sunday night that was held in Temple Beth Israel. There were, it seemed to me, at least 1,000 people that were standing. We had the governor.
Deborah, I'm going to pause you for a second here because I just want to let the audience to know, I think your phone might be ringing on your end and all we hear is the occasional interruption, but we're getting most of what you're saying.
All right. I'm so, so sorry. At any rate, we had a vigil with many elected luminaries, and then we had interfaith representation as well for the kind of mourning and grieving part. And there's many other vigils that are popping up. The Unshul is going to have a memorial service like a Shiva Minyan this coming Sunday, where we will, as David mentioned earlier, we'll have the opportunity to share our feelings and also.
Okay, that's a long one. I'm going to get in here. Yeah. That's a long pause. Yeah. We're talking to Rabbi Deborah Kolodny from the Unshul in Portland and Rabbi David Zaslow of Ashland's Havrashir Hadash about Pittsburgh and how people think and respond to that. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. David, I read some of your comments in the paper about overcoming darkness with light, but when people feel hate for the people who hate them, how do you dissipate or redirect that rage?
Well, partially, you know, just to affirm what Rabbi Deborah is sharing as well, one thing we could do besides voting is speaking up. And speaking up means different things. We have to keep ourselves safe. Sometimes we'll run into situations of homophobia or Islamophobia or anti-Semitism. We're afraid to speak up. But, you know, in many situations, like in our families, if we hear a statement about Jews that makes us feel a little creepy, that makes us cringe a little bit, that's the time to speak up, to say something, whether it's gently or firmly to really speak up, or to speak to a colleague or a friend or a rabbi, to come to a Rabbi Deborah or myself and to get some advice. How do I handle the situation? Because if we don't speak up when we hear a racist comment, if we don't speak up when we hear a homophobic or a sexist comment, then we're just sort of letting it slide. And I really believe if Pittsburgh taught us anything, it's the time for letting it slide is really over now.
So Deborah Kolodny, you back with us?
I'm here. So
okay.
Sorry.
Okay. I want to stipulate your training for interrupting hate is not about approaching people with guns, but what kinds of situations do you train for?
Yeah. What we're finding all across the state of Oregon is that people, there's a huge increase in verbal abuse on public transportation, in the streets, in cafes, in the parks. So it's really meant to address situations where weapons are not present. And it's basic de-escalation training, and it provides the least risky approach to supporting someone in extricating themselves from a potentially dangerous situation. And what I find in the workshops is that it elevates the consciousness of everyone attending to be vigilant and to be eager to support those who are being targeted. So really it changes consciousness, not just behavior.
I have to wonder, though, when I look at news coverage out of Portland in particular, when you see Patriot Prayer showing up and Antifa showing up, it's almost like they have regular dates with each other, not to make it too cute. But does it feel like too many people do relish a good confrontation? They actually want to shout in each other's faces?
I think it's actually a very tiny percentage of the population. And I also just want to go on the record as saying I don't see an equivalence between Patriot Prayer, who shows up with their loaded semi-automatic rifles and shows up on the top of buildings with rifles before events. Antifa's coming, maybe somebody has a rock or something, and the vast majority of them are unarmed. But they're unwilling to allow the violence of Patriot Prayer to infiltrate our city and to make it unsafe for us.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, I want to repeat, I think it's a very small percentage of the population on both sides, but there's permission now for violence.
Yeah, that's the key, is that silence is a form of confirmation. That, as Elie Wiesel said, that it's not just indifference that's the great evil now in our world, but it's also our silence, because silence always affirms the oppressor. And so whether it's on anti-Semitism on the far left or on the far right, equivalence or not, it's our silence when we hear a statement that makes us feel something's a little bit wrong here. It's really the era now. It's the moment now for us all to have some courage and speak up in a way that's safe, of course.
Rabbi David Zaslow from Ashland and Rabbi Deborah Kolodny from Portland joining us here on the Jefferson Exchange to get some perspective on Pittsburgh. You can join the conversation with your thoughts and questions. 800-838-3760 to join by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. You two are obviously steeped in your religion. I mean, but you also are people of the world, so you can look outside that. I mean, so what do you make of people who just hate Jews? I mean, where do you think that comes from, David?
Well, you know, it's an age-old hatred. It probably the original word for Hebrew was Ivrim, the people who from the other side. I'm not sure if that we named ourselves that or if we were called that because we were, so to speak, immigrants moving from one side of the Middle East to the other side of the Middle East. And so the age-old hatred of the Jew is always as the outsider, as the immigrant coming in, as the less-than-human vermin or termite coming into the into Europe and then into the United States. So when we see anti-Semitism, it's not new to Rabbi Deborah and myself or to any rabbi. Anti-Semitism is age-old, just as, you know, white supremacy is age-old in terms of our nation. It started really with the Puritans coming here. It was white supremacy came in against indigenous people and then, you know, African slaves that were brought here. So anti-Semitism is not new. It's an age-old hatred. It's usually the hatred of the outsider.
And Rabbi Deborah, when you consider the numbers of Jews in the world, then what was the number you gave me a couple of years, 16 million or so?
16 million at most, yeah.
Uh-huh. Is it almost laughable, the idea that Jews control the world or something?
Well, it is laughable, and I want to add to what Rabbi David said. There's a brilliant analysis by Eric Ward of how anti-Semitism is actually animating white nationalism in this country right now. And it launches off of the rhetoric of the Third Reich of Jews controlling money in the banks and the media and the entertainment industry. But it goes beyond that to with a very heinous imagining on their part that Black people and immigrants could not have on their own won the kinds of gains that they have seen in the civil rights movement. And so somebody who passes as white must be responsible. And so it's the Jews. And so the Jews are at the root of what their distress is. And so Jews need to be eliminated. I mean, it's very, very powerful rhetoric, very, very powerful belief. And so there's new flavors of even though it's ancient, it's also got new iterations.
All right. So, and I should point out too that the march in Charlottesville in the summer of 2017 was ostensibly in response to the removal of a statue of Robert E. Lee, and yet what were the marchers chanting but Jews will not replace us?
You're right, exactly. My daughter's part of that synagogue that they marched by was there on that Friday night.
Really?
And was a volunteer medic on Saturday morning. So, you know, there weren't good people on both sides, that's for sure. And what Rabbi Deborah is saying is very true, that you find this neo-Nazi, this white supremacist going back into the theoretical ideas of Nazism, but it even existed way before that. The fear of the outsider is the fear of somebody from the other coming and taking control of your life. And what happens in Judaism, because it's a religion, just like Christianity is rooted when it's at its best in the gospel, Judaism is based in the Torah, and the commandments of the Torah is not just to love your neighbor as yourself and to love God, but it's also to welcome the stranger, and because we were strangers in a strange land. And so because we have that as part of our core, part of our theology of welcoming the stranger, we're always seen as people who are standing up for those who are the most oppressed, which is true, and it really upsets those in authority who are doing the oppression.
Rabbi David Zaslow, Rabbi Deborah Kolodny, our guests on the Jefferson Exchange. Go ahead, Rabbi.
Yeah, I was just going to add, in fact, the shooter in Pittsburgh was very clear that he was targeting a synagogue because Hias, which is a Jewish refugee support organization, was active, and you know that Jews are at the...
Okay, yes,
I'm sorry. I'm back. The quote-unquote caravan, which is just people seeking safety.
Right.
It's very much. It's ancient and it's new. Yeah. And I want to make one point, which is that it's not. I really want to emphasize that Jews are not the only ones who are at risk. You know, when this happened, the first thought was of that Black church in Charleston a couple of years ago, and the Sikh Gurdwara near Milwaukee, and a mosque in Minnesota, and the LGBTQ nightclub in Orlando. All of these are of a piece.
The intersection of hatreds, all oppression is connected, is not just a little cute motto, but it's really, it's very, very, very true that all these places of worship or study are all at risk.
Let's touch briefly on the presidential angle on this. The president did what presidents do. He went to Pittsburgh and consoled people. Lots of people did not want him there. How did the two of you approach this in your own thinking and in guiding your people, David?
Well, at least the mayor of Pittsburgh, it's not that he wasn't wanted there. It's just that it was the wrong time. This was a time of grief and mourning and not a time to take the precious resources of the police, for example, and to place it to the president. So it was very upsetting to many people from Pittsburgh, not because the president shouldn't come and do comfort, but it was just completely the wrong time.
And Rabbi Deborah?
Yeah, I think there's another angle that many Jews and Jewish leaders were concerned about, which is that President Trump has not denounced white nationalism and has not, when he made statements about equivalencies, there are good people on both sides. He has not gone far enough in many of our minds to denouncing the violence and the hatred. In fact, he said the synagogue should have had security, really kind of placing the blame on the synagogue. And so a lot of people did not want him there, not just because of the timing, but because they want him to step up and say the right things and frankly, reroute his followers to nonviolence.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, Rabbi Deborah, as we both know, that there are dog whistles. The word globalist in the 30s was used against the Jews, with the international
banking
Jew.
Banking conspiracy.
Right, the globalists. And the nationalists were the Nazis, or the white supremacists in Europe. So when he uses a term like, I'm a nationalist and I'm not a globalist, what he's telling his most extremist followers, and I want to emphasize what Rabbi Deborah said too, it's a minority, it's a small minority, but they're the ones sometimes that act out in the most violent ways, that when he uses dog whistles like that, it activates those people.
We're talking mostly philosophically so far. Let's talk concrete and physically. I mean, have you talked about ways to improve security at the synagogue?
Yeah, absolutely. Probably, you know, this is not new, by the way. It's not with President Trump, and I want to make that clear. The uptick in anti-Semitic crimes and reports to the ADL is up 57% just this last year alone. But there's been a rise of anti-Semitism in our country, in the United States, for the last 10 or 15 years, steadily increasing every year. So this has been going on. And about 4 or 5 years ago, there's a group in our community that scared us enough that we had to raise money and waste money, I feel, but we had to do it for security cameras and alarm systems in our building, and we're upgrading that now. The Ashland Police Department will be giving us a training. The Homeland Security, we're going to be applying for a grant for new equipment. So we have to up our security, which is a heartbreak to have to spend money on security when all people want to do is come pray and chant and sing together.
Rabbi Deborah, what kinds of moves have you made?
Well, we're in an interesting situation because we don't have a synagogue building. We are renting space once a month from a church, and our other gatherings are at people's homes, and this is all announced on a Facebook page that's a private page. So we're hoping that we're okay.
Yeah.
But my colleagues who do have very identifiable synagogues are certainly looking at increasing security, and the Jewish Community Center is as well. And as David said, it's a shame to have to direct resources. Yeah.
And I want to say I was telling you, Jeff, yesterday that I was on an evangelical Christian television station interview, and they have had threats against their building, and they have had to upgrade their security. So wherever it's coming from, and I'm not making an equivalency, but wherever that kind of violence is coming from, the work that Rabbi Deborah is doing in her major way, in my small way, to try to diffuse these situations in the best way we can is more urgent than ever.
Yeah, and it needs to be remembered again and again that this is bigger than Jews. People were murdered for something central to their being, and
yeah, exactly.
So this is something for all of humanity to respond to.
Yep.
And I want to thank both of you for joining us, though, to give us a perspective from within your congregations and your own thoughts. David Zaslow presides over Ashland's HaVrashir Hadash. Rabbi Deborah Kolodny is with the Unshul in Portland, and she's been our guest in the past to talk about interrupting hate in public spaces. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you very much, and thanks. Good to hear from you, Deborah.
Thank you. Good to hear from you, too, David. Bye-bye.